Caroline, Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We are 1 hour away from the Titans pre-draft press conference. We will carry that live and in its entirety starting at 1 p.m. And we're only 2 days away from the NFL draft. So joining us now to break it all down is former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher. Coach, appreciate you for joining us. Just to give us and the listeners a little bit of an idea of what the life of an NFL head coach is like. What's this, 2 days away from the draft? What are you doing? What's the planning process to have all of your ducks in a row come draft night?
Well, hey guys, thanks for having me. It's always nice to visit with you. This time is probably, I'd say, the time you look forward to the most, because you've ended those endless draft meetings that started right after a huge breakfast, and then go right through a lunch and then a dinner, and then you got another snack, and you've been doing that for 3 weeks, and that's done. You got your board ready, and now you're literally just sitting, looking at the board, and going through different scenarios. Now, that I'm talking about the head coach, the GM, and discussing things. Now, all the other assistants and the scouts, they're making sure the numbers are good. God forbid you try to get a player on the phone because you're getting ready to take them in the third round, and there's no answer, and you can't find him. And so everybody's checking to see that the numbers are good, but. And then now this is the time where, okay, what are you hearing? Who's ahead of us? Who's behind us? Let's get these mock drafts. Let's overlap them. And then now go through, for example, if you're picking three or wherever, you want to know what's going to happen at one and two. Well, anything could happen. One and two can stay, take someone that you expected them to take, someone you didn't expect them to take, which throws a wrench in it. And then you always got that possibility of them trading out. So you have to be in a preparation mode in the event your guy go, if you're a three and you want and you got two guys you like and they're gone, then you got to get out, who you go out to, how far do you go down, and all the different scenarios. So it's preparation time. I refer to it as kind of like pregame warm-up. Everybody's focused, the work's done, now you're getting your mind right, and it's just all about preparation.
And this time of year, you can call it silly season or smokescreen season. You're hearing so many things coming out, leaks from buildings, reports from the NFL insiders or NFL draft insiders. How do you, within the building, decipher what's real information and what's just, smokescreens being spread to get you off of another team's trail?
Well, it is. There are those things happen. And we were part of those things. We did some good things. You bluff people. They take the bait. Boom. You trade back. You get your guy, and you pick up a pick and things like that. So it's pretty much just constant communication. People in the league have people that they trust. Okay, Rand knows people in the league. Coach knows people in the league. He's going to talk to buddies and friends, try to get a sense, but. If you're doing things right, your entire organization understands one thing, and that is try to get as much information as you can regarding what's going on in the league without giving any information out.
We'll talk with Jeff Fisher discussing the NFL draft and, his experience. And then also the Nashville Cats, who open up their season this Saturday against the Minnesota Myth. First, I want to ask you about that, Fish. How excited are you in this organization with starting up your first, Arena League game this season?
Well, it's really exciting, Derek. Appreciate that opportunity, too. 6 or 8 months ago when I decided to get in and help, the reason was pretty simple. Nashville has been so good to me, to my family, to friends, and to us since the time we arrived. The Cats were a big part of Nashville while we were busy. Mm-hmm. Derek, you remember when we didn't know exactly what they're doing, but we're hearing about it. But, come to find out over the last, 4 or 5 months, realize that the Nashville Cats version one, they were in a lot of households, and those people are still there, and they're still excited. So I see this as an opportunity for me just to kind of give back and thank Nashville for the great times that we had, and provide a little flavor and something a little bit different, some enthusiasm, some excitement, and then if you get right down to it, I mean, it's kind of a little nerve-wracking right now because there's so many things. See, there's 16 teams in the league, and there's 4 teams in each division. We're one of the only one or two that didn't play over the last couple of years. So, in essence, we're startups. So, are the shoes in, are the socks right, are the jerseys right, all that kind of stuff. But got a lot of people working real hard, and it's going to be a great opener. And, after this thing's over, we'll have 4 games, additional home games here and one up in Clarksville. So looking forward to it. We'll get the staff together, Sunday morning and say what was good, that was good, and what do we need to work on, and we'll fix that, and we'll go on the next one.
Well, I know I will be there supporting. I told Caroline I'm going to go by and watch the Cats, and hopefully they can come away with their, first victory of the season. So the game starts at 7:30. People at Municipal go down. I like the website because the website has the countdown fish, 4 days, 4 hours, 47 minutes, and 55 seconds. So
to be exact.
So that's when the game starts. But let's get into the draft again. And what is it like these last few days as you enter into the draft? Because this is what we've been kicking around. How many scenarios do you have to have written down before you even get to the day of the draft? Because, as you know, things can happen in the draft, and it can throw everything off, especially in the first round.
Well, a lot of that, a lot of the scenarios you're talking to are just potential trade scenarios. Mm-hmm. Derek, for example, say you're sitting there in the middle, you're sitting there at 16, okay, and you want to know what it's going to take to get into the top 5, into 5 to 10, maybe to 14 or 15, and what that value is. And then, you need to reach out to everybody that's above you and go, hey, look, we're interested in moving. So if your guy's not there, please give us a call. And at that point, this is the conversations that are going on now. At that point, you kind of formulate, okay, well, what can we do? What can we give? What's the value of our third pick? You might give them 2 picks and then flip 2 picks. So you got to systematically refine and establish and define the values for trading all over the place. So that stuff is going on. And again, it's just, you're talking to agent, make sure talking to some players, making sure everything's still okay. You might have to do some follow-up injury things right at the last minute. I mean, when I was with St. Louis, we traded up the first pick. I mean, we got the quarterback of our choice. So we're sitting there, and we went up, of course, with the Titans, and then moved around a little bit, and then all of a sudden, we're getting calls to come back down. So, you got your quarterback decisions. You make it. You stay put. You get your guy. And unless the value for some reason becomes, an opportunity you can't pass up, and then you have to consider it. So there's just a lot of talk, a lot of conversation going on. But, you really need to, at this point, 2 days away, you need to kind of take a deep breath and, go for a jog, maybe eat a couple salads to counteract what you've been eating for the last couple of weeks, and just get ready and go.
Hey, you better drink a lot of water. Fish, how do you weigh, because you've been a part of this, you've been a part of, sort of rebuilding a franchise and trying to stockpile, talent or whatnot. How do you sort of compare, best player of need compared to just the best player available? Player of need compared to a best player available? Because obviously you've been a part of situations like that. Do you go, when you're building a franchise, do you go with the best player, or do you go with the best player of need at that position?
Well, it really depends. I mean, there's so many factors involved, need versus the best available. A new staff will come in, and they that's what they've been doing here for the last few months, is identifying the needs. I mean, Coach Callahan knew what the needs were and the weaknesses and the strengths of this team before he took the job. So you got your needs, ranked from 1 to 10. Okay, look at your number, your most immediate, your top need for this football team, or whatever position that is. Okay, you should have already made an attempt to go out and fill that need through free agency. That's the beauty of the timing. And if you didn't get to do that, then now you got to go ahead and do it through the draft, or you got to do it where you're trading either picks for player or player for player during the draft or after. So if you're just looking at, a once-in-a-decade player that happens to be plays a different position and what your number one need is, then you got to give it some consideration. Is he an impact guy? Okay. For example, we love our defensive ends, but this guy's going to be a 12-sack guy his rookie year, and he'll have double-digit sacks for his whole career. He's going to be a game changer. Well, you got to consider that. And who we got, okay? So if we got depth here, then, we might want to be talking about potentially moving somebody on our roster, because, all of a sudden now they're going to become expendable because you've gone out and got that guy. And so you have to have those scenarios start to, dovetail. So, it's just a lot of conversation. I don't know if I answered your question, Derek, but need versus best available, you tend, depending on the position, if it's a strong position year for offensive guards, for example, and you need one really bad, you don't need to take one in the first round, for example. You can get a good one in the third or the fourth because there's a bunch of in the same position. But if you get out there and you're in a position, a tight end where, we actually have to have a tight end and there's only two or three, starters or blues in this draft, you got to go get your guy. And you better be right on it. So at the end of the day, I think the most important thing, and that I learned really, really early on in my career, is, there's discussions, there's disagreements, there's debates. But when we make the pick, as a program, as a team, and as a group, and everybody supports that pick, knowing that it's not a perfect science. You might make mistakes. That's something to deal with down the road. But everybody needs to be on the same page and supporting every single pick, and you got a chance. Then it becomes the coaches. Now it goes from the personnel lap to the coaching lap, and now the coach's got to make it right.
We're talking with Jeff Fisher, former Tennessee Titans head coach and president of operations for the Nashville Cats. Game one on Saturday evening. Jeff, the Titans brought in a first-time head coach and first-time play caller in Brian Callahan. It's a rather inexperienced group of coaches. Denard Wilson, first-time defensive coordinator. Nick Holtz, first-time NFL offensive coordinator. How do you feel about the direction of the Titans coaching staff?
Well, you also have to include, I don't think there's a lot of experience at the special teams coordinator position. Mm-hmm. I know Colt. I'm a Colt Anderson fan. But everybody needs to get their start at some point. And, you've got a talented group of coaches that have been in a lot of different systems and schemes. And they're going to, if you communicate your way through it and you have experience on the staff, Frank Bush, for example, is on the defensive staff. And, he and Denard have worked together. These guys are going to put all the pieces together and they're going to figure it all out. And so, even though you've got youth, you got energy, you got enthusiasm, emotion, and you got a group of young guys. And it's definitely a change, and change was necessary in a lot of people's eyes here. So you're just going to wait and see what happens, but they'll be ready. This is a huge event for this staff this weekend. This is a huge event, and then they'll get back into their X's and O's next week through the mini camps. And it's for the staff, you got the rookie camps and you got the veteran and you got training. You got, three different opportunities to do your installs and do all that stuff. So by the time training camp comes around, there'll be plenty of experienced guys on the staff.
And last one from me, Coach, and we'll hear from that coaching staff in just about 30 minutes for the Titans pre-NFL draft press conference. But I kind of viewed this offseason as, what can we do to help the young quarterback? What can we do to help Will Levis? What can we do to protect Will Levis? What can we do to give Will Levis pass catchers? What can we do to just create an environment where the young quarterback can thrive? They're faced with a dilemma of, you know, of protect the quarterback or give the quarterback weapons potentially in the draft. Let's say if one of these receivers is available and a great left tackle is available at 7, what do you think is most advantageous for a young quarterback? A solid offensive line or giving him pass catchers?
Well, it doesn't matter what I think, but go back a couple years and look and see exactly what the Bengals did. The Bengals get a really good quarterback. He has a lights out year, his rookie year. They're strongly, in my mind, and this is what I heard, they were really strongly considering the left tackle position. And they got talked out of it, and they made the right decision. And what did they do? They draft a receiver, and they go to the Super Bowl. So, you know, in my mind, you need weapons. You need guys that can do things with the ball in their hands and that can contribute, you know, et cetera. You can get the guys up front. On occasion, they'll be a, you know, once every 10-year guy. But you can get the guys up front. You can trade down, get a weapon, you know, do all kinds of things. But in my mind, I think that's where they – now, you know, I haven't studied this offensive line. I know that, you know – There's some young hopefuls and there's some stuff and trust me, Neil's going to get it out of them. So, you know, you got, in my mind, the answer to your question is exactly what the Bengals did a couple of years ago. They were looking at the left tackle and you may not have made this hire had the Bengals drafted that left tackle instead of the receiver.
Former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher. Coach, really appreciate your time and all of your insight. And D-Mace did have a question.
Mm-hmm. What?
Pertaining to the Nashville Cats.
Yes, Coach. I was going to come. I'm coming out, you know, Saturday to watch.
Yeah, so you're asking, Derek, you don't need to bring cleats.
Oh, I was going to bring my cleats, Coach. I mean, I was going to bring my cleats.
Well, I know. That's why I'm just guessing.
Okay. He said hamstrings are stronger than they've ever been.
Hamstrings are strong because I hadn't used them in a long time. But.
Okay. Bring some good gloves, Derek, because these balls are slippery.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I'm going to take
balls
that.
When the balls go in the stands, they stay. They belong to the fans. So it's hard to prepare good balls, you know, so you need some good gloves. That's all.
All right.
I'll stop and pick a pair up for you.
All right, then. I know. Well, I got a bunch of gloves in my house.
Nice and
they're
sticky.
Good gloves. They, okay. They've caught over 900 passes. So those would be good, I think, Fish. But, again, we're happy to have had you on, Coach. And I look forward. I know a lot of people here in Nashville look forward to the Cats opening game this Saturday versus Minnesota Meth. And y'all will come away with a win, I'm sure of that.
Well, I'm hoping. I don't know what to expect. Kind of doing the other side of it. But I do know this, the people that come and stay and leave are all going to have smiles on their faces and have a great time. And that's the most important thing to me. So come on. We'll look forward to seeing you.
Absolutely. Good luck with opening night. I know it's going to be a wild success and really appreciate your time. Jeff Fisher, former Tennessee Titans head coach. Appreciate it, Coach.
And one more thing. Go Preds.
Yeah.
There we go.
Let's go.
Game two tonight.
I know they didn't schedule one. The NHL didn't schedule a game on Saturday because we're playing. So they went Friday, Sunday.
Hey,
so,
they knew.
Barry Trotz put in a good word with the league and said we've got a very big night here in Nashville. The Nashville Cats are playing at the Municipal Auditorium, and we cannot have a playoff game on Saturday. And the NHL said, "Yeah, I know. We already took care of it. Trust me. They've got your back."
Hey, Barry, he's the best. Barry's the best. You know what he's doing, obviously.
All right. Appreciate it, Coach.
Okay, guys.
Yep.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for your time.
It doesn't matter what I think, but go back a couple years and look and see exactly what the Bengals did. The Bengals get a really good quarterback. He has a lights out year, his rookie year. they're strongly, in my mind, and this is what I heard, they were really strongly considering the left tackle position. And they got talked out of it, and they made the right decision. And what did they do? They draft a receiver, and they go to the Super Bowl. So, you know, you, in my mind, you need weapons. You need guys that can do things with the ball in their hands and that can contribute, you know, et cetera. You can get the guys up front. On occasion, there'll be a, you know, once every 10-year guy. But you can get the guys up front. You can trade down, get a weapon, you know, do all kinds of things. But in my mind, I think that's where the answer to your question is exactly what the Bengals did a couple of years ago. They were looking at the left tackle, and you may not have made this hire had the Bengals drafted that left tackle instead of the receiver.
That was former Tennessee Titans head coach Jeff Fisher and the president of operations for the Nashville Cats. Game one for the Cats coming down on Saturday evening. But we got the NFL draft on Thursday, and that's the philosophical question that we've been asking ourselves going back all the way to the end of the season when Brian Callahan was hired as the next head coach of the Tennessee Titans. Do you go skilled player? Do you go offensive weapon? Or do you get Will Levis some protection up front and go left tackle? Now, Jeff Fisher, who joined us in the last segment, appreciate him for stopping by. He says he goes the Cincinnati Bengals 2021 NFL draft path. They went Ja'Marr Chase instead of Penei Sewell. They found themselves in the Super Bowl that year. That's what Jeff Fisher said that he would do. Your thoughts, D-Mace?
I can't refute what the coach said. Obviously, he's been in that room. There's not a wrong answer. But what do you prefer philosophically? Do you want to take the pass catcher, or do you want to take the tackle? Now, in that case, did many look at Penei Sewell as a, you know, generational guy, like once in every 10-year type of guy? They saw Ja'Marr Chase as potentially one of those guys that you get every so many years. And, you know, for the most part, he has held up his end of the bargain. Now, he's been hurt some, but when he's on the field, he's a difference maker. I wonder if they looked at Penei Sewell that way, as a once-in-a-generation player, a once-every-10-year player. That would have made it a little bit different if I knew exactly what they thought of. Sewell, yeah. Penei Sewell. I keep on combining his first with his last name, Penei Sewell. There's many out there that are saying Joe Alt is a generational player. He is a once-in-every-10-year tackle. If you compare that to the pass catchers that are in the pass catchers you will be left with, because we believe that Marvin Harrison goes first, Neighbors goes right after that. What's left is Adunze. Or what if Neighbors is there? Do you consider Neighbors as a generational player? That's the difference. Which one of these guys you consider a generational player? But then if you consider both of them, then it's about, okay, what my philosophy is. Like, okay, am I more leaning toward a pass catcher because they're both evenly, we think of them both the same? Do I lean more toward the pass catcher because of what transpired in Kansas City? Or am I taking my own route, or my own road, and I'm choosing to tackle? Well, if he's a once-in-a-generational tackle and Neighbors or Dunze is just a damn good receiver, I'm taking a once-in-a-generational. And Fish even mentioned that.
Yeah.
He said it's different when you're talking about a generational player. I would tend to believe they consider Joe Alt a generational player. Do they consider – that's the thing. Do they consider Neighbors or Dunze? Because those are the two guys that are going to be left more than likely. Do they consider those two guys generational players?
See, that's what I don't know about Alt. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because I don't evaluate offensive linemen.
Exactly.
I can't. You know, I can hear from all of the people that do. Mm-hmm. do they consider Joe Alt a generational player? Mm-hmm. I heard Trevor Maddich on with Jared a couple weeks ago, and he said, look, Joe Alt's a really good left tackle. Mm-hmm. But you can find really good left tackles in several different drafts. You
so he wouldn't consider him an elite player then?
He didn't consider Joe Alt a once-in-a-generation kind of left tackle. An elite player? Yeah, okay. Perhaps. But not like this is a left
Joe
tackle
Thomas
that if you don't take him right now.
Ogden,
yes.
Guys like that.
Not that kind of guy. Not like if you don't take him now, you're not going to find a left tackle like this for probably the rest of your career. Mm-hmm. I think he views him as an elite player in this draft, but not like you can't find another left tackle like him maybe in next year's draft or the following year.
So
but that's not to say that he can't be an impact player or an elite player for you and in this draft.
So if you got him ranked as a Trent Williams type of player, do you take him?
Or like a Jake Matthews.
Because
I think
Trent Williams is different from Jake Matthews.
Yes.
Trent Williams is what we consider a generational guy. Jake Matthews is a damn good, he's a really good tackle in this league.
And he's been in Atlanta for the past 10 years?
Exactly. He's been there the last 10 years. But do
And there's value in that in and of itself.
And that's what we talked about yesterday. It's like, okay, because we talked a bit about, okay, if they sit at 7, would you be upset if they took a Fuaga? Is that how you pronounce
Fuaga.
It? Fuaga. Or a, who's the next tackle available? Or J.C. Latham. Not even Latham, but
Fashanu.
Yeah, Fashanu. Mm-hmm. Do you take a Fashanu at 7? Well, I'm sure probably a lot of people would probably be upset if you took Fashanu at 7. Mm-hmm. But if you got him ranked as a top 10 player, and it's not much difference between him and that receiver, then if you take Fashanu, then I'm not upset. If you got him ranked as a top 10 player, I can't be upset with that because you did the evaluation and you ranked these guys. So,
and it's their evaluation that matters.
Exactly.
It's just I haven't seen any other evaluation that would lead anyone to believe that Olu Fashanu is a top 7 player in this year's draft. But also, take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Every year, draft evaluators who make a lot of money doing specifically this are wrong and are dead wrong.
But what if he is, like you said, a Jake Matthews? A 10-year player, you ain't got to worry about him. He's good. He's been in some Pro Bowls, been second team All-Pro, maybe not.
Reliable.
Reliable guy. Is that, if you take him at 7 and 10 years down the line, you look at it, or even 5 years, and he's just solid, you don't have to worry about him. It's not a bad draft because you don't have to worry about that position. Maybe he wasn't an elite player in some people's books, but I considered him an elite player, so I drafted him, and look what happened. For the first 5 years of his career, I haven't had to worry about him.
And then you can also take the side of the opportunity cost.
Yeah.
What you missed out on. Let's say if you take a tackle, whatever tackle that might be, Alt, Fashanu, Latham, whoever. Neighbors is on the board, and you go tackle over Neighbors. Mm-hmm. And let's say Neighbors goes to Chicago at 9. I don't think he's fallen that far, but let's just, for example, Fantasyland. And Malik Neighbors ends up being the next Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill kind of receiver, and he's an All-Pro for more than half of his career, then you might look at it and say, well, we could have had that.
Yeah, you could have, and there will be many people pointing at that. Like,
and
look
you're
at what he's
going to have to
exactly.
pass up on great
look
players
at what he's
draft.
Doing. Look, I look at it from this standpoint, from a financial standpoint. Either you want your portfolio to grow slowly and not take many risks, but you know is this growing, and you're not worried about it. You set it to the side. You know that everything is taken care of. Even if the market crashes, my things are still okay.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like everybody else's. Or do you take the, man, if I get this stock, man, I can hit it out the park. I saw some other people hitting it out the park. But then you also risk the it not hitting out the park. Whereas I can go with the safe bet, and for the next 10 years, my portfolio is growing. Mm-hmm. While yours may grow at one point, but then dip down real low at another point where mine is just gradually growing, and nobody's paying attention to it. But when you look back at it 10 years later, you're like, wow, I didn't know I accrued that much interest. Uh-huh. I got that much off my my dividends are that much. You're like, you're thinking like, wow, okay, I'm glad I did do that. So that's the space you're in. Do you want the potential immediate impact of a receiver? And he can give it to you, but you know potentially it's short-lived because he's going to, because there's a potential of him getting injured, just like it is the left tackle, but there's more potential for him to leave to go to another team rather than this left tackle. This left tackle, you ain't letting get, if he's that left tackle and he's just, you know, consistently that guy, you're not going to let him get out the building for anything. You're just not.
Jack Conklin.
Yeah, you're not Jack Conklin. You shouldn't let him get out the building. When you let guys like that get out, Jack is the perfect example of what I'm talking about. Jack made it all pro. Mm-hmm. Jack was a pro bowler his first season. He got hurt. But had you left him at that spot, he would have been a position you don't have to worry about for the next 10 years. You wouldn't.
And then we've seen a slippery slope at that position for absolutely. The last 5 to 7 years.
Absolutely. So what do you want? Do you want that consistent, I don't have to worry about him? Or do you want the potential of a home run, with the receiver? You're not wrong in any space, but those are the things you got to weigh.
And I think it's also important to point out that there's still risk involved, even if you draft
risk.
A left tackle.
Exactly. There's
nothing. I hear so many people, whether it's on the text line or on Twitter, talking about take the sure thing, take Joe Alt. I don't know that he's a sure thing, nor do I know that Malik Nabers would be a sure thing. Caleb Williams is going to be the first overall pick. He's going to be a Chicago Bear. He's not a sure thing. There's no such thing as a sure thing in this year's draft. So if you're talking, if you're on the side of take Joe Alt no matter what because he's the safe thing, he's the sure thing, he's the safe bet, no, he's not. Mm-hmm. None of these guys are. It's the draft. Weird things happen all the time. So I think that it's an interesting perspective that Jeff Fisher has of, look, you have to keep need involved. You have to keep that in mind. But also, when you have a really special player, when you have the opportunity to bring that player on your team, sometimes you just got to go with that. Because when you start drafting for need and put need above everything else, that's when you find yourself in sticky situations. That's when you're not building a roster maybe the best or most effective way. But we've got a bunch of thoughts in our text line. We are right to you coming up next. Titans pre-draft press conference in 15 minutes. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. And speaking of the NFL draft, do not miss Nashville's best 2024 NFL draft coverage on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. This Thursday, stop by Twin Peaks in Madison at 6 p.m. for live 2024 NFL draft coverage. There's going to be some drama, maybe some breakdowns, maybe some freakouts. So I would say it's not one that you want to miss. So you can get the best draft coverage as we break down each pick at the home of the 29 Degree Beer. Coverage presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, ESPN Bet, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Nashville's best deal of the week is Joyland in East Nashville. Joyland is a fun new concept by Chef Sean Brock designed to spread joy through his love of cheeseburgers, shakes, buttermilk biscuits, fries, and fried chicken. Get a half off a $30 Joyland gift card right now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals and enjoy the best burger in town. We talked with Jeff Fisher earlier this hour, talking draft philosophy, need over best player available, tackle over wide receiver, and we are right to your phones on that. In 10 minutes, we'll hear from Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan for the Titans pre-draft press conference, but right now, straight to you, phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John's on the line with a thought on the draft. What's up, John?
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, yeah, I it's kind of a more general thought, but I've just been thinking this even last year. I feel like even from high school to pro, and this isn't 100%, but I feel like most GMs, ADs, coaches, they get about 3 years before you really, are going to keep them or let them go. And I think those guys have like a 3-year plan in their mind. And I just wondered, if you guys, what your thoughts as you look at this, instead of looking just right what's in front of you, but if you were trying to make this decision based off of what you did last year, what you're doing this year, and what you want to do next year, so after that third year, you're judged on how well you've done. That's all I had.
Yeah, thanks for your call, John.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, GMs may not get that long. Now, I understand that from a college perspective, you know, could because it's recruiting classes, and I've always said give a head coach in college at least, and they probably even cut that down with NIL and all this other stuff. Give them at least a full recruiting cycle to determine, you know, are they good enough as a coach?
And even the college patience.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. With NIL and transfers and all this other stuff,
yeah,
that's diminished some.
You construct your roster basically the same way an NFL general manager
exactly.
does.
Exactly. Yeah. So it sounds nice in theory, and you're right. You know, when GM takes a job and head coach takes a job, they should be able to get at least a 3-4 years. That fourth year should be that marker year where – either they've done it or that third year, either they've done it or we need to move on. You know, but it's not like that in majority of places in the NFL. Why? Because they're looking at the next team and they're seeing how well the next team is doing, because there's always a Houston Texans or a Jacksonville Jaguar who finished last in the division. Then next season, they end up winning it. So that puts the pressure on you as a new GM and a new head coach to get your organization turned around, because the owner is looking at it from the standpoint of, they did it. Mm-hmm. Why can't we do it?
Yeah.
We all basically, in a sense, got the same amount of money, in a sense. Yeah. So why, if they're able to do it, why can't we do it? We got a top 7 pick or a top 5 pick. We should have got our quarterback or whoever we needed to allow us to have a season that we can look at and say that was a successful season. Why can't we do it? So that 3-4 year, it doesn't exist anymore, really.
And if that is the plan, mm-hmm, that Brian Callahan put on Amy Adams' drunk desk and said, here is my 5-year plan to fix the Titans, she would have said, get out of my office.
I'd fix it now.
What's your 2-month plan? Mm-hmm. What's your 6-month plan? Are we going to be in the playoff next season? Mm-hmm. Is that fair? Probably not. But is that the reality? 100% that's the reality. Because I think the Houston Texans are the perfect example of that. They literally went from worst to first. Mm-hmm. That's how quickly it can happen. And that's how quickly I think the expectations are going to be. Like, I don't think that anyone expects the Titans to be Super Bowl contenders this season. I don't expect the Titans to be Super Bowl contenders this season. But I think we all expect progress.
Yes.
And I think we all expect there to be enough of a sample size of a decision to be made of, mm-hmm, is Will Levis the quarterback?
Mm-hmm. Or not.
Yeah. Or not. Like, you need to figure out those questions. You need to answer those questions. A little bit of breaking news is coming in from Elliot Friedman and Frank Saravalli. Thatcher Demko, Vancouver Canucks goaltender, is out tonight. Mm. And his status for the series is questionable. He's been dealing with an injury, I believe, still looking to see. I'm figuring this out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the same time that you are. He's injured. I don't know if that was an injury that he sustained in game one or if it's an injury that's been nagging. But Thatcher Demko, Vancouver Canucks goaltender, is out and is questionable for the remainder of the series. That's a massive bailout for this Predators team, because the latter quarter to half of the season, Thatcher Demko was largely unavailable for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. And that's when we saw them kind of take a step back. We know that goaltending is such a massive part of just seasons as a whole, but especially in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So a massive, massive shift in this game tonight. Again, Thatcher Demko out tonight for the Vancouver Canucks for game 2 against the Nashville Predators. Questionable throughout the rest of the series. All right, coming up next, we will hear from Rand Carthon, from Brian Callahan. I at least expect to hear from Brian Callahan or Rand Carthon. Doesn't say exactly who's going to be available. I would expect both of those two to be available. But the Titans pre-draft press conference coming up next. Caroline, Billy, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.